Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to View from the Top Rope, where we discuss professional wrestling from a higher vantage point. I'm Diesel, joined by, as always, here in Zeus's lair, Chad.
Oh, thank you, my good man. That was a great opening. I loved it. Two times, it's only it all took.
It took two times. Hopefully this one is the last one we do. So, it's been a pretty fun week in professional wrestling, hasn't it, Chad?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Raw was very solid. I enjoyed, you know, the hour and a half version on Hulu. But SmackDown, flat out amazing. And Shinsuke Nakamura went over John Cena in the most surprising thing that's happened in the WWE in I can't remember when.
Honestly, who saw that coming? I mean, John Cena putting someone over, making a new star? Come on. So, how was your week otherwise?
So, I'm going to be honest with you, Diesel. I'm going to reveal to you and the rest of our listeners one of my dark secrets.
Lay it on me.
I am kind of obsessed with writing Wrestling E-Federation online. And I do it through xwabattlezone.com. And so I write as a character named Jester, and it's awesome.
Yeah, I've read some of your stuff. I think it's pretty good.
It's so much fun, and I'm really plugging this right now. If you ever, you know, thought, hey, I could write this match better. I know better than what a booker would think how this match should go, or a road agent. You know, you can just write it yourself. You need to put emotions into it and write the commentary, and it's flat out amazing. And right now, we're in the Lord of the Ring tournament, which is our version of, like, you know, the King of the Ring, whatever. So it started with 24. And now we're down. We are about to be down to the final three. And it's looking like I might make it to the final. So I'm super jacked about it. So that's why I had to talk about it this week. But, I mean, I don't want to ramble on about it too much. But everyone should check it out. Once again, the website is www.xwabattlezone.com. And that's a free plug just for anyone who wants to check it out. But how's your week, Ben Diesel? What have you been up to?
It's been pretty good. I've actually have a story that we talked about last week that I'd like to update.
Oh, really? What you got there for me, buddy?
Remember when we talked about the Braun Strowman, Karen Jarrett altercation?
Yeah, I brought that up last week.
Yeah, well, there's been an update. So basically, where we left off was Braun Strowman was begging Karen Jarrett not to tell anybody that he was mean to her when she asked for an autograph for her son.
Yep, so, I remember all that.
So basically, I read on Cage Side Seats, which is a great website. I get a lot of information from there, and they usually don't lead you in the wrong direction.
No, they're really good, and they're generally very accurate.
So I heard, from what I read, is that the story was kind of not all the way true.
You mean it was wrestling vamped, if you will?
I'm very much so. I am not going to speculate on who was more intoxicated or who was not intoxicated. But Karen Jarrett went up to Braun Strowman, like reported, I guess, and asked for an autograph. Braun Strowman didn't know who she was. Well, then I guess she flipped out on him. That's when she cut the wrestling promo. And I don't know if he really went down to his knees and begged for forgiveness or what. But then, so the whole meat of the story is that it was leaked by her husband, Jeff Jarrett, to try to shine a better light on her. But like, come on.
So Jeff Jarrett leaked the fake news about what happened, you're telling me right now.
Yeah, to try to make her look better. But, I mean, he had to know in the long run that the truth was going to come out.
You know, so no one can see us, but both of us keep doing this, like, circle motion with our hands. And I don't really know why, but we just keep doing it back and forth to each other. And I know you can't see it, but I wanted to, you know, really bring you into what's going on while we're doing this podcast.
It's better than banging on the table.
Yeah, that's true. Better than the cat also hissing at us.
It might happen still.
Yeah.
Knock on wood, but not on this wood because mess up the sound.
Well, it's a marble table as well, so.
The legs are made of wood.
Oh, well, I'm glad we're talking about the table now.
Okay, so I guess we're going to go into our new favorite segment, or everyone's new favorite segment, the mystery question of the week. And last week we had a couple doozies, and I started off first, so this week, I'm going to give Chad the honors, and he's going to start off first.
Yeah, so this question, actually, I probably only thought of it maybe late last night. But once I thought of it, it kind of took root in my brain. And I've been thinking about it ever since. So my question to you this week, Diesel, is if you could bring back one retired or passed away star of the past and put them in any federation, right, that's running right now, who is the one person you would pick? And they don't have to be dead. They can just be retired. But who would you pick and where would you put them? You don't have to book what they would do, but you just have to pick a person and put them somewhere.
Anybody in a current federation.
In a current federation, but anybody who is retired. And I want past people. I don't want you to go, oh, The Rock in any, you know, back in the WWE. I'm talking old school. I'm talking retired for a long time, like prime in the 80s.
Oh, that is a good one. One that kind of popped into my head, it would be adding Jake the Snake Roberts into the Wyatt family, but that was kind of the gimmick they gave Randy Orton when he was in the Wyatt family.
Yeah.
This is an interesting question. Wow, there's a lot of wrestlers out there. Let's see here. I don't know. I mean, what would you put in?
All right, I'll give you a few of my thoughts right away because, as I said, I thought about this late last night and then I thought about it all day today and all of last night. And so the first one that clearly came to my mind is Ric Flair, and I would put him in New Japan right now because he was one of the most technical wrestlers of all time. He was pretty much Zack Sabre Jr. before Zack Sabre Jr. was Zack Sabre Jr. And in New Japan, his American charisma, he could either be the most over Gaijin ever, or he could be the most despised heel of all time in New Japan right now. So Ric Flair was my first thought. I also then thought of Ricky Steamboat in ROH, one of the best technical and high fly wrestlers who didn't really get as big a push in the WWE. And then, of course, you know, we have all the things that happened later in his career that I don't want to talk about. I'm just talking in his prime, just as a wrestler.
Of course.
Yeah, not as a real-life person or anything, just as a wrestler. But I would put him in the Ring of Honor. And then my final thought, really the only person that I would really want to bring back to the WWE would be Rowdy Roddy Piper, because he could be the heel that the entire WWE needs.
Okay. While you were talking, I thought of a couple. And an interesting one would be Eddie Guerrero. Bring him into LAX. I mean, he fit perfectly. I mean, here he has the connection with Conan.
Are you talking about TNA?
TNA or like current Impact, GFW, LAX, either one, even the old one. He already has the connection with Conan. And it would make sense right there. It's kind of what they're doing with Alberto El Patron, but not really. It would be a lot better with Eddie Guerrero because of their past.
Did you just drop the bombshell that you weren't supposed to tell me before? About who joined LAX?
Did I? I don't know. We'll find out when we do my Impact review.
Oh, interesting. All right. Good tease.
Another one I thought of, which I don't know where this one came out of, but got Sanity. Who do you think would be the perfect member for Sanity? I'll tell you. Brian Pillman.
Ooh, that's good. Or the Wyatt family either, but yeah, Sanity, that'd be really cool in NXT.
I think they could do like what they did with the Nation of Domination when The Rock came in and dethroned Farouk. He could be The Rock and kick out Eric Young. I think that'd be great.
Oh, wow. I didn't even think of that at all. That was a really good one. Look at that. But I mean, it was a little unfair. You made me answer first, so I gave you a little, you know, free time on that one. So if your question's hard, I'm asking for the spare time as well.
Well, you already had a chance to think about it. I had to have a little bit of time.
Yeah, but that's the point of the question. You're supposed to do on the spot. But it's all right. It was awesome. I'm glad you thought about it, because Brian Pillman was the best answer you could have given me right there.
Well, and then my question to you kind of a little bit ties into your topic. It has to do with past meeting future. It can be past first pass. I want to know what your ultimate one-on-one dream match is of all time between two guys who have never faced each other one-on-one.
Ooh, that is a good one. And that was one of my side questions. Like, I had backups before. And I've thought about that question. So I feel I'm a little more prepared. Clearly, the first thought is the match that was kind of hyped, which was AJ Styles versus HBK. That would just be flat out amazing.
Phenomenal.
Oh, phenomenal is another word that could be used for it. But I think that my actual dream match of all time, oh, that's so difficult. So I'm going to go with a weird one. I'm going to go with one that might not make a lot of sense, but I want to see Kenny Omega versus the Macho Man Randy Savage. And I think that would be just an absolute barn burner of a match.
That matchup didn't even cross my mind, but now that you say that, I want to be able to bring Randy Savage back from the dead so we can book this match anywhere in the world. I don't even care. That would be a great match.
No, I mean, and Randy Savage was a textbook planner, and Kenny Omega is the greatest innovator in professional wrestling. And just think of the spots those two minds could have brought together and the plans. Oh my God, that's the greatest match of all time right there. That just popped into my head, boys and girls. Welcome to the real world.
That is a top popper. These are top popping questions. That's what we should name this segment.
We are not naming this segment top popper questions. Sounds like a food.
Well, so I came up with this question. I've been thinking about this for a while. And I told you on Tuesday night that I had my question already, but I didn't tell you until right now what it was. But this week on Steve Austin's Unleashed podcast, it was a fan call-in episode. And the first question actually on the show was this question, but directed towards him. And I swear I didn't steal it. I thought it was actually cool because he gave the answer that I'm going to give you right now. And obviously it's going to be Stone Cold Steve Austin versus Hulk Hogan. You got the star from the 80s versus the star from the 90s. That would be a big time money match. It might not be the best in-ring match, but I mean, who's not going to buy that pay-per-view?
Oh no, I would guarantee it's not going to be the best in-ring match, but it will be the most over the crowd's ever been and not knowing what to do because they will, the entire crowd's going to be going, Hulk Hogan, Stone Cold, Steve Austin. They're just going to, they don't know who to cheer for. Oh, that'd be a lot of fun. That's clearly a lot of people's dream match. And I would love to see it. I'd buy that pay-per-view. I don't even like Hulk Hogan.
I mean, it was rumored for WrestleMania 18 that it was supposed to be Hogan, Austin, and then plans changed and we got Rock, Hogan.
Which was a great match,
A great match, but we got it again down the line. We never got Austin Hogan. So, I mean, that's kind of a missed opportunity there. But I was thinking you can do the flip side of this too. Still keep Austin and then have big moneymaker from the 2000s, Austin Cena. I mean, that would also put butts in the seats.
I almost said Kenny Omega versus John Cena, but then I realized that's probably going to happen. But it'd still be a dream match because Big Match John, as much crap as people give him, he is a really good worker, and he, when the lights are on, he goes hard.
You might as well go Omega Austin as well. I mean, just throw that one in there too.
I mean, Omega versus pretty much anyone, but I'm still sticking with Omega versus Macho Man Randy Savage.
Pretty solid.
Oh, it's a great answer. Great answer. And moving right along, we are going to move into another brand new segment this week. We're calling this one Pro Wrestling 101 with Professor Diesel.
Okay, so we're planning on doing this one weekly here. And a little disclaimer before I start. There's a lot of things that happen in professional wrestling. And to cover it all, we'd be here for days. And so, since I am the professor, I am going to decide my curriculum, and that's going to be it because I'm a teacher and what I say goes.
Understandable.
So, like I said, we're planning on doing this as a weekly segment. I mean, maybe if we have a special show, we won't fit it in, but we'll call that Spot in the Ring.
Oh.
You like that, didn't you?
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
Okay, so I'm about to take you folks to school here. Maybe we'll even get a little down and dirty with a little religion. Who knows? Take it to church. Let's see. So we're starting off. The week that we're doing is August 4th, which is today as we're recording, is Friday, August 4th, to August 10th, which will be Thursday. We're going to do a Friday through Thursday week every week.
Sound yeah, we're going to go into the future. Yeah, we're going to go from when we record till the next time we record. So that makes sense.
Yeah, okay. So the first day is August 4th. The first date is August 4th, 1995, was Collision in Korea. It was a WCW pay-per-view co-promoted with New Japan Pro Wrestling. It took place in North Korea. It was the first American-promoted wrestling event in North Korea. So, and I'm not sure, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was the last as well. I've heard stories, but I won't get into them because I don't know the details and I don't want to speculate anything here. So it was taped over 2 days, and it was a combined two-day attendance of 340,000.
Holy God.
Yeah, I believe that is also the largest two-day attendance record for professional wrestling in the world.
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, there might be some. I can't even think of the New Japan main show in January. Wrestle Kingdom.
Wrestle Kingdom. There you go.
Yeah, that's the only one that maybe. But no, that sounds like it's probably the biggest.
All right, now we're actually at a 20th anniversary here. So 1997 was the 100th episode of Nitro.
Ah, I love me some WCBW or WCW.
Yeah, WCPW is also great. So
it's true.
I can't fault you for that. And plus, we just watched Loaded yesterday, so it's fresh on the brain. So anyways, this one took place at the home of the Detroit Pistons, a place called The Palace. It's in a suburb of Detroit, Auburn Hills, Michigan. The main event that made this Nitro memorable was Lex Luger versus Hollywood Hulk Hogan for the WCW World Heavyweight Championship.
Nice.
And Lex Luger actually ended up defeating Hulk Hogan in this match.
Yeah, of course. They traded the belt left and right.
Well, if you let me get to my next fact here, you would know that you probably should have said that, because this ended a reign of Hulk Hogan that was 6 days short of a year, 359 days.
Wow, I look dumb.
Yeah, well, it happens to the best of us, Chad. I won't fault you for that one either, but a few strikes and you're out.
That's why you're the professor.
Okay, that's exactly right. So here we go. We got 2002 at a SmackDown taping in Richmond, Virginia. There was a shocking match. Shocked the world, Chad.
Really?
You know what happened? It was a match between Brock Lesnar and Hulk Hogan. And you know what happened? Brock Lesnar won by knockout.
What?
By knockout. You wouldn't see Hogan again until on WWE television until January 2003.
What? Are you kidding me, man?
Shocked the world.
Wow, that is a shocking fact right there.
And then on this day in 2008, Raw, which was also in Richmond, Virginia, John Cena and Batista, crazy tag team, defeated Legacy, which was Cody Rhodes, Ted DiBiase Jr.
Nice.
For the tag titles. Which I thought was an interesting fact. Weird combination for a tag team. Weird, but they do that a lot. They had Undertaker, Stone Cold, Mick Foley.
Weren't John Cena and The Miz tag champs for a hot minute there?
That sounds about right to me.
I don't have factual proof to back that up, but I feel like it's true.
Oh, that's all the dates for this one. But we got a couple birthdays on August 4th.
Oh, do we?
Today. And the first birthday is the heavy metal rebel, Frankie Kazarian.
Well, a happy birthday to Frankie Kazarian.
Turns 40 today. A very happy birthday. And the next one is a legend. The Iceman, Dean Malenko.
Oh, that's a good one.
He turns 57.
Nice.
So moving on to August 5th, in the year 2000.
Year 2000.
Pro Wrestling Noah was born on this, tomorrow actually, August 5th.
Yeah. And nice.
Yes, the promotion was founded by a group of All Japan Pro Wrestling defectors led by Mitsuharu Misawa.
Dude, nice. That is exactly how you pronounce his name. I'm proud of you.
So, remember when I said I'd be taking you to church?
Yeah.
Do you know why they call it Pro Wrestling Noah?
It's about the Bible and leading people through the Red Sea.
No. That's Moses.
Oh, darn it. Once that, again,
Professor. That's strike three.
Oh, Professor,
you're
going
to have to go to the principal's office. Okay, well, anyways, They call it, it's named after the biblical story of Noah and the flood. Two animals, two of each animal, and they survived the flood. And so basically, they called it Pro Wrestling Noah because much like the survivors of the flood, it was a new beginning. And I just thought that was a pretty cool way to name your company. I mean,
yeah, and they produce a ton of great wrestlers. I mean, Luke Harper wrestled for them. Tommy, I'm pretty sure, wrestled for them. So many great wrestlers have been from Pro Wrestling Noah and still in Pro Wrestling Noah.
That's very true. And they got that partnership with GFW Impact right now, which is giving them more of a U.S.
exposure.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay, so then here in August 5th, 2006, Ring of Honor had a pay-per-view called Fight of the Century in Edison, New Jersey. And in this pay-per-view, Samoa Joe, the champion, went up against Bryan Danielson, and they fought to a one-hour draw for the heavyweight title.
Oh, so you're saying they did it before Okada and Kenny Omega did it?
They did, but I haven't seen that match, so I can't compare, but I'm sure it was a barn burner, as JR would put it.
Oh, yeah, we should probably look that match up. I mean, you are a Ring of Honor ringside member. Is that what they call it?
I am a ringside member, and right. I'm sure I could find that pretty quick.
We should probably check that out after the podcast.
Oh, I'm in. I love those two guys, so...
Oh, yeah. Oh, and in case anybody out there doesn't know, Bryan Danielson is also known as Daniel Bryan in the WWE, just in case you're not in the know.
I wonder why they made him change his name. That's kind of weird to me. I mean, it's pretty much the same thing.
It's exactly the same thing, but reversed. And I don't really know why they did it, but it was before WWE was cool with people keeping their name. I don't really know how CM Punk got to keep his name. That's still a mystery to me, and actually it's probably just because CM Punk was like, nah, bro. I'm not changing my name. You can fire me if you want. And they're like, well, we will. No. All right, fine. Fine. You can be CM Punk. Fine.
I'm sure that's exactly how it went.
Yeah. I mean, I can see it in my head.
Vince McMahon, if you don't change your name, we're going to fire you. Fine. I guess exactly how it went.
Yeah, exactly. I'm a historian now in my own head.
I'm the real historian here, the professor. Moving on to August 6th. In 1993 in Sheffield, England, Hulk Hogan defeated Yokozuna by disqualification in a WWF Championship match. So Yokozuna still retained the title because it was by disqualification. But fun fact about this match, it was Hulk Hogan's final WWF match for retiring for a little bit. And then eventually, 9 months later, so ending up in WCW. And another fun fact, his best friend, Brutus the Barber Beefcake, also had his final match at this event. Never reappeared on WWF TV, unlike Hulk Hogan.
Really? So, I mean, so what happened to him? Did he? I don't remember. Did he go to WCW?
Yeah, he went to WCW, and he was part of the Kevin Sullivan, whatever they call the...
Legion of Doom?
No, the Legion of Doom. What are you talking about?
That's a superhero reference, man. Come on.
Legion of Doom or Hawk and Animal, the Road Warriors? Come on.
Yeah. Well,
this is a wrestling podcast.
Hey, I can still talk about superheroes. Don't be angry.
I'm not angry. I'm just saying this is a wrestling podcast. But, no, it's something like the Dungeon of Doom. There you go. See, I shouldn't have discredited you. You're on the right track. I apologize for that one.
Thank you, Professor.
But, so, he ended up joining the Dungeon of Doom, and he had, I can't remember what his character was, but he had like white face paint, kind of looked like a mime. It was crazy, and then all of a sudden he turned into basically Brutus the Beefcake, but not without the barber gimmick. It just didn't work. He had his, like, the back of his pants were cut out, so you could see his butt. It was just, I didn't understand what was going on with that one. But anyhow, let's move on to 2001, August 6, 2001, at Raw in Anaheim, California. Tajiri, the Japanese buzzsaw, defeated X-Pac for the light heavyweight championship. I just thought that was a little interesting one.
I mean, I love Tajiri, and I don't mind X-Pac. So.
I mean, well, back in the day, now it's all cruiserweights. I mean, it's nice to look back and think about when there were light heavyweights, and this was right around the invasion time too. So I'm sure it was Tajiri for the Alliance and X-Pac for the WWF. And then also in this Raw, The Rock defeated Shane McMahon in a street fight. And this was also The Rock's first appearance since The Raw after WrestleMania X7.
Wow.
So it's kind of a big deal there.
I mean, he faced Shane McMahon on his return match, which is a little weird, but I mean, it makes sense for the time.
Well, I mean, Shane McMahon just had match of the night at this last WrestleMania, so I mean, he's not a wrestler, but he can hold his own in the ring.
I mean, AJ Styles carried that match. We all know that.
I'm sure that, I mean, I probably saw the street fight when I was a kid, and I'm sure it was an entertaining match.
Oh, I remember.
I don't remember. I've seen a lot of street fights. It's probably in there somewhere. If I really think about it, I probably can bring it back up, but I'm sure it was an entertaining match. I mean, for sure someone bled. It was 2001.
It was.
Okay, now moving on to August 7th. We're at SmackDown taping in Los Angeles. And I really like this one here. It was the first thing that happened that made this SmackDown memorable was DDP and Canyon defeated APA for the WWF Tag Team titles.
Ooh.
So this was during Invasion Time 2. It was actually the next night, SmackDown after the Raw, where Tajiri just beat X-Pac. So a lot of titles are changing hands, but that happened back then. I mean, it kind of happens right now. So times really changed. Is this really the new era?
Professor, can I throw a quick fact in here right now?
Go right ahead.
Okay, so fun fact. The Dudleys are the only Invasion team who were undefeated on pay-per-views for any belts during the entire Invasion angle. The Dudleys. They wrecked people.
Well, that's my fact that I learned today. I did not know that.
You're welcome, Professor.
Well, another thing, so moving back to this SmackDown, another thing that was interesting was the Brothers of Destruction defeated Natural Born Thrillers. Do you remember who the Natural Born Thrillers were?
I mean, Professor, enlighten me.
Chuck Palumbo and Sean O'Hare.
Nice. WCW guys again.
Yep.
Bring it in.
They defeated them for the WCW tag belt, so both titles changed hands same night. I thought that was interesting.
I know that I talked about it before, but the Invasion pay-per-view is the first pay-per-view I ever bought with my own money, so it holds a very special place in my heart, and I bought it way back when I still had 56K dial-up internet, which the young kids won't understand, but it was terrible. It lagged. I saw like probably every fourth frame for you smart people that I could see, but it was awesome. It was a message board under it, and I chatted about it.
Yeah, when I was a kid, at that time, I didn't get to see very many pay-per-views live or even taped, so I had to pay a friend because I wasn't going to miss this one, and I still got the VHS at my house right now. I could probably pop it in and watch it, but it'd be easier just to watch it on the network, so I'll leave it in storage.
Hey, check out the WWE Network, just for fun facts.
$9.99.
Ayo.
So, then we're going to move on to August 7, 2002. This is a NWA / TNA weekly pay-per-view in Nashville, Tennessee, back before they had Impact. The thing that sticks out from this weekly pay-per-view was Ram the Truth Killings defeated Ken Shamrock for the NWA heavyweight title. And I know that you aren't a fan of R-Truth, Ron Killings. But the thing that makes this notable is Ron Killings is recognized as being the first African-American NWA World Heavyweight Champion. And I think that's just a good fact. I mean,
wow, that is really impressive. I did not know that at all. It doesn't change my opinion on him at all, but that's really cool.
I didn't expect it would, but I mean, I had to move it along, so I mean, I thought you'd think that was a cool fact. I mean, who wouldn't? Yeah, we're just gonna move along here to 2006, and this one also took place in Tennessee. It's a Raw, but it was in Memphis, home of Jerry the King Lawler.
Oh,
this has nothing to do with Jerry the King Lawler.
Okay, I thought this was gonna be when he had his heart attack. I couldn't remember when that happened.
No,
I was worried.
More like 2011, 12.
I was worried.
Nope. This one, Umaga. Talking about Kenny Omega so much, I almost called him Omega. It kind of looks like Omega on my notes here. But whatever. All right. Umaga defeated Triple H in a rare pinfall victory. How rare, you ask? The last time Triple H lost on Raw to a pinfall victory previously to this was on December 12th, almost 8 months earlier, 2005, to Kane.
Wow. Man, you are in depth tonight, Professor. I'm impressed.
I told you, I don't got everything. The things I do got, they're meaty, and you're going to learn some things.
They're juicy.
So then that does it for August 7th. Let's move to August 8th.
Ooh.
On August 8th, 1998, WCW presented Road Wild in Sturgis, South Dakota.
Wait, Road Wild's the one where they had the battle in the semi-truck, right?
No, that wasn't that one. That was a
darn it.
That was earlier than 1998.
That's like my fourth strike. I am just screwing up tonight.
It's okay. That one, you get a mulligan on that one.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
But this is the one where they had all the people sitting around the ring in their motorcycles, and they're revving up their engines the entire time. This was like the fourth or fifth one. And this one was probably the most popular one. It had 8,500 in attendance. All were free, which, giving away a pay-per-view isn't the smartest thing. But back then, they're raking in the money, so it probably didn't affect them at the time, but in the long run, it might have. But there were 365,000 pay-per-view buys, so that was a big number, especially during the Monday Night Wars. And then the reason this one sticks out to me is that the main event was a match with DDP and Jay Leno, yes, you heard me right, the old host of The Tonight Show, big chin, white hair with a little black spot, Jay Leno, he teamed with DDP, and they defeated Hollywood Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff.
Are you effing kidding me right now?
I am not telling a lie. I haven't seen the match, and I have no interest in seeing the match. But it's a little fun tidbit that deserves to be on this list here that we're doing today.
You know, what's funny is I guarantee that I watched that match, but my brain has gone, no, no. And it has just blocked it off because that was when I was watching WCW just religiously. So I saw that match and my brain has just blacked it out.
So now that we're past all the horrible August 8th facts, I got a couple of good ones here for you. In 2010, Seth Rollins signed with the WWE on August 8th.
That would have been Tyler Black at that point, though. Yeah, boom.
It would have been Tyler Black at that point. Or you could go by his real name, Kobe Lopez. I know that, too.
Hey, look at you, Professor.
I'm a real mark. So then we go to exactly 1 year to the day later. I don't know this guy's real name, and I'm pretty sure this isn't his real name, but it's his name to me. Jay Lethal signed with Ring of Honor in 2011.
Wow, nice.
And then lastly, on August 8th, we have a birthday. And I did not record how old this person was, and I'll explain why here. The birthday is Sable, and I am a fear for my life that if I actually say how old Sable is on this podcast, Brock Lesnar will hunt me down and he'll be looking for a new partner on this podcast. We'll need a new professor to do this segment here.
I don't want that, so please don't say the age.
I don't either, but it's her birthday. Happy birthday, Sable.
Happy birthday.
All right, now we're moving to August 9th, which is probably the biggest day of this whole week. It took up almost a whole page of my notes here.
Wow.
And it's a pretty interesting day. We'll start out in 1986. In St. Louis, Missouri, Ric Flair defeats Dusty Rhodes to win the NWA World Heavyweight Championship for the fifth time.
Oh.
Five times.
Five times.
Booker T.
Booker T. Five times. But no, Ric Flair.
Yeah, Ric Flair, there you go. But how he defeated Rhodes was he had him in the figure four, and Rhodes refused to submit. And finally, his shoulders got counted down for the three, and Ric Flair won his fifth NWA World Heavyweight Championship.
Nice.
Moving on to 1997. Here's a match I was talking to Chad about earlier. It's a match that I have seen, and it's a very violent match. And if you like that kind of stuff, I definitely recommend it. It's one of the best in the ECW collection. So this match is actually the 20th anniversary of it, I should say, on what would it be next Wednesday, 20th anniversary. So maybe get together with some friends and watch this match. It's not a very long one.
It sounds very interesting. I know it's coming up. So come on, tell other people.
So Sabu faced Terry Funk, in an ECW championship match in a barbed wire match. It was the main event of the appropriately named pay-per-view Born to be Wired, the ECW arena in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. It was a short match, like I mentioned before, because, well, they weren't wearing their wrestling attire, really. They had shirts and their pants on and stuff, so they got tangled up in the barbed wire, and they really couldn't move around the ring anymore, so they're kind of stuck in one place. So Sabu decided to, well, we'll just go to our finish, and it was a short match. It was a bloody match. It's at the same time, I imagine, with barbed wire, you couldn't really not bleed.
Yeah, no, it sounds like a death match, so I'm sure there was blood everywhere.
So after the match, both men had to be cut out of the barbed wire with wire cutters, and that was actually part of the match when I watched it. It was, like, interesting. I had Joey Styles commentary talking about how brutal the match was. But in later interviews, former ECW promoter Paul Heyman has said that the level of violence bothered him so much, he would never again book such a match.
Wow. And to bother Paul Heyman's pretty intense.
Yeah, I don't know if that anything else has bothered him any more than that ever has. So Paul Heyman, if you like that kind of stuff, listen to Paul Heyman. It's that brutal of a match. So, well, that's all I got for August 9th. Oh, no, that's a lie. We still got another big event here on August 9th. It's 1999.
Ooh,
1999. It's a Raw. It's actually a pretty decent Raw. I mean, Y2J, I mean, made his debut. I mean,
after
a long waited countdown. I mean,
yeah, against the Rock. Against the Rock, yeah.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it was – I was a stupid kid. I didn't know anything that was going on. I'm like, what's that countdown? What's going on? And when it finally came down, 10, 9, 8, I was like, what is happening here? What's going on? And I'm like, oh, it's Chris Jericho. I know Chris Jericho. I didn't even watch WCW. I don't know how I knew him. But I was excited. The promo lives in infamy.
It is one of the greatest promos of all time.
Yeah, exactly. It was a great debut. Probably the better debuts in the history of professional wrestling.
Even though The Rock buries him on that debut as well, right after Jericho cuts his promo.
Yeah, he holds his own for a minute.
So. Yeah, and then The Rock buries him.
Yeah, but he showed some...
spunk?
Some spunk. He showed some
panache.
Yeah, he's a prospect. He's waiting in the wings. He has some awesome things. It just hasn't. He showed it.
Oh, I was hoping you would get there. I was trying to just say random things until you got there.
I got there.
Yeah.
So I'm also looking at my notes here and seeing how amazing this Raw actually was. I mean, it was pretty good.
Oh, what else happened on this Raw?
Well, Kane and X-Pac, remember when they had a little tag team going?
Yep, they were friends.
They defeated the Acolytes for the WWF tag titles. If you remember, on August, I believe it was 6th, August 5th, the Brothers of Destruction... No, that's wrong. They defeated Natural Born Thrillers. The DDP and Canyon defeated APA, which was what the Acolytes formed into later as the story moved on. They defeated them for the tag titles, and they were only two-time tag team champions, so they lost both their tag team titles in the same week. Not same year, but same week. So kind of an interesting fun fact there.
Fun fact.
That's not all that happened in this Raw.
Jeez.
Post-match, Kane speaks for the first time without his voice box.
What?
I remember that. I was like, what? Xbox is like, no, bro. You don't need it.
If JR Buddy was on this show right now, he would lose his mind about that fact.
Just wait. He'll be here in a couple weeks.
We're going to put that madman on this show and see what happens.
And he'll talk a lot about Kane. You want to know about Kane? Yes, Kane. He'll tell you.
He's got every record Kane holds, because Kane holds a lot of records. I'll let you know that all that fact right now. If you want to check it out, go on the internet and type in Kane records held in pro wrestling, and it's all of them.
Losses, wins.
Just so many.
Yeah, everything.
Consecutive appearances.
So you think that with all that I've already discussed about this Raw, that would be it, right?
Oh, geez. There's more?
There is more. Okay. You ready for this one? In the main event, China defeated Triple H and The Undertaker in a triple threat Falls Count Anywhere match to become the first women's number one contender for the WWF Championship?
I don't remember that at all. What are you? Are you kidding me? How did they get their way out of that one?
Well, next week they booked a match with her against Mick Foley, and Triple H helped Mick Foley beat her, and he became the number one contender. So, for as cool as that moment was, they kind of like stepped in it.
Yep, they ruined it right afterwards. All right, that makes sense then.
So okay. That's all I got for that Raw. And I got a couple August 9th birthdays here.
Oh, birthdays.
Actually, there's only one. I just have a little fun fact about this person. That's why I thought there's two.
Oh.
So on August 9th, next Wednesday, it is the last real man in pro wrestling's birthday, Silas Young.
Hey, nice. We met him.
He's going to be 37 years young.
Nice. He's really, oh, wow. He's younger than I thought he is.
And a little known fact, this is actually a little controversial. When I was looking him up on Wikipedia, he claimed that he was the nephew of JBL, one of JBL's favorite wrestlers, Stan the Man Hansen.
Wow.
But reading further on his Wikipedia, later said that Stan Hansen, in an interview with good old JR, said that they were no relations. So I don't know what to believe. I'm going to stick with that they are. I like to believe.
I like that, so I'm going to go with it too. All right. Might be wrong, but fine.
So then finally, we move to August 10th, the last day of the week. Here we go. This is a big one. In 1977, the man, Terry Bollea, a.k.a. Hulk Hogan, makes his professional wrestling debut in Fort Myers, Florida.
Holy God. Wow, that's an insane fact. So you're saying this coming Thursday is the debut of Hulk Hogan.
It's actually the 40th anniversary.
Whoa.
I bet you he's not going to have any specials on the network.
Oh, man.
Maybe they will. Maybe they'll surprise, like, congratulations, Hulk Hogan, on your 40th anniversary.
You never know. I mean, it seems like he might be coming
back
soon.
They should. They really should.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll be a big surprise. And I mean, that'd be great. Maybe it'll be on Raw or SmackDown. I doubt it. But, I mean, that'd be a great surprise. So then also August 10th, in 1984, the Junkyard Dog made his WWF debut. Hmm. And the reason why this is interesting is he was working for Mid-South Wrestling at the time, didn't tell them he was going to leave the promotion. They didn't find out that he left the promotion until they watched his debut match on TV with the rest of the world. And needless to say, they were not happy. But, I mean, they really couldn't do anything. At the time, 1984, the WWF was growing, and they couldn't really do anything about it. So
I'm going to throw in a weird thing again to rep the XWA again. My eFed, because I was part of this like 15 years ago, and there was a guy back then who he called himself the Mad Dog, and his gimmick was that he was the son of the Junkyard Dog, and he was ridiculously, I mean, he was solid, but he was also really terrible, and we like to make fun of him. But I just want to throw that out there. So once again, repping the XWA. Woo!
Okay, well then this is finally the last of the segment. We're almost done here. Got a couple of birthdays for you.
Ooh, August.
Finish it out. August 10th.
August 10th, baby.
So, Stu Bennett, a.k.a. Wade Barrett,
nice,
turns 37.
Nice. WWE should have never let that man go. He should be wrestling still.
I agree. At least somewhere. I mean, he's a talented guy.
Yeah, he definitely should be wrestling somewhere.
Okay. Ever heard of Fred Ottman?
Fred Ottman. The name sounds very familiar, and I feel like you're going to blow my mind right now, Professor.
Well, I mean, you might know him as Tugboat.
Oh.
Or Typhoon.
Oh, I have a signed photo of them.
But most famously, he's the Shockmaster.
Yeah.
He turned 60 on August 10th, and ding, 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 class is out. So, I've been talking a lot, and I'm sure that people are starting to get sick of just hearing me. So, how about we talk a little bit about the G1 and have Chad give us his thoughts and whatever his takes on the G1. So, I'm going to throw it over to you, Chad.
Oh, yeah. So the G1 has still been amazing. At this point, I'm almost 100% caught up. I haven't seen today's matches. We are recording on the 4th. So there was a show today that I did not get a chance to watch. I was pretty busy today, so I could not watch the show. But I will be watching it probably later tonight, maybe tomorrow. I'll be caught up all the way by next week because you're almost at the end. But the G1 has been absolutely phenomenal. So the last point that I left off with you guys, I do believe I was on, I want to say probably night 7, because that was when Naito and Makabo, yep, I was on night 7. So the next night we went into was night 8. Juice Robinson and Tama Tonga had a match. Tama Tonga won, once again targeting Juice Robinson's knee. This is a story throughout the entire G1. Juice Robinson's pretty much been on one knee the entire G1. He's just been getting it ripped apart by everyone.
So it's not like the WWE where they just forget that they have a knee injury and they go to the next match and they're perfectly fine?
No, not at all. He has been selling this knee injury throughout, and it has been the number one story for Juice Robinson. It's also his first ever G1, and he is also the youngest person in the G1 this year.
That's the way it should be. Sell your injuries.
Yeah, no.
Make it more realistic.
It's really awesome, actually, how they do it. And, I mean, they do wrestle night after night. They only have, like, a day off. And even when they don't wrestle a G1 match earlier in, I don't know if I've told you this before, and I know you don't watch a lot of New Japan, but earlier in the card, everyone who is in the G1 Classic still wrestles on the card, but they wrestle in tag matches, and they will wrestle in tag matches with guys who aren't in the G1, but they'll wrestle against their opponents who are going to be their G1 opponent for the next night.
Yeah, from what I understand, that's how most of the shows start out with. Bunch of 6-man, 8-man, 10-man tags.
Oh, yeah. And also they throw the Young Lions in there. And there is a lot of Young Lions who I'm not going to talk about right now because I'm only doing the G1. It's so much wrestling to watch and cover. I do watch it, but I just don't have time to cover it with you guys right now. We're only doing the G1. But there is some Young Lions right now who are coming up in New Japan who are going to be huge Omega stars. Like, and I don't mean Kenny Omega, like the person. I mean just the absolute greatest Japanese stars soon. There is some new Okadas and some new Omegas coming up from that Young Lion division.
Oh, that's exactly what we need. Spread them around.
Oh, yeah, no. New Japan is really coming into its own, and they're expanding to America. But so, as I said, Tama Tonga beat Juice Robinson, really worked over that knee. Next, we had Sonata beating Yano, which was awesomely hilarious because Sonata actually took Yano onto the ramp and tied him up with tape into his, you know, when they tie people up, you've seen people do it where they tie them up and they're only their butts exposed and they can't move.
Yeah. Put their hands and their feet together.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Sonata does that pretty much every match. And he usually then follows it up with a drop kick or a kick to the side, right to the buttocks. But he did this on the ramp and he actually tied Yano up with tape. And then got the count out victory because Yano always wins by DQ, and it was awesome actually.
Didn't Yano get tied up with tape with Omega last week when you were talking about the G1?
Yes, I did, and it's now becoming a recurring theme with Yano and the tape. But this one was a little different. The first one, both Yano and Kenny Omega had their legs tied together. Yano literally got tied into a pretzel with tape this time and got counted out for the victory.
Sounds pretty fun.
It was pretty awesome. Once again, I do not enjoy Yano in general, but he has impressed me in this G1. He's had some good matches, and even his comedy spots have been awesomely hilarious.
Does he still try to sell his DVDs?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he has a DVD every time. Actually, before the Kenny Omega match, the big spot was that he was trying to give Kenny Omega this DVD, and he told him just to open it, and when he opened it, it was a powder explosion.
Nice, classic.
Yeah.
It went poof.
Yeah, it definitely went poof.
You don't get that? That's a 205 reference with Corey Graves and Tom Phillips.
Yeah, 205 live.
It was definitely a natural reaction. He made Corey Graves laugh. He lost his train of thought.
He lost his cool, if you will.
Yeah, like broke character is what I'm trying to say.
There you go. But no, it was absolutely hilarious. Check that out on the network if you haven't seen it. The poof moment on 205 Live with Defari. And then poof. But sorry, we totally got off topic. As I said, Sonata won that match. Next, we had Evil going over Minoru Suzuki, which was actually pretty surprising to me. there was just a hard fought battle. They went back and forth. And then Evil actually caught him with his quick. His finisher is the STO. You know, that is standard. You
know, STOs.
Okay, so yeah, that's what his finisher is. It's kind of almost a rainmaker. He tends to like wrap people into it and then pull them in and slam them down real quick. But he actually beat Minoru Suzuki. He had him in the sleeper. And then he went to switch into the Gotch style pyro driver, which is Suzuki's finisher, which you, of course, know it is as well.
I do too.
You're a smart man, Professor.
I'm Mark.
But so no, and then he actually reversed that into it, and Evil got the win, which has actually surprised me heavily. Evil's been killing in this tournament. So in the next match, we had Kazuchi Okada beating Kojima. Just Kazuchi Okada is actually working completely heel in this G1 tournament. In this entire match, he was almost mocking the crowd, and by almost I mean completely mocking the crowd.
Is it kind of like a reverse WWE where the foreigner is the bad guy, but at home they're the top face? Kind of like, because when he came over for the G1 in America, he was the big baby face against Cody Rhodes. Do you think maybe it's kind of like that right now?
I don't. He's actually just working a full-on douchebag style, as in, so Tenkozy is one of, it's the greatest tag team in New Japan history. It's Kojima is one of the parts. Kozy is the other part. And he always comes out to the ringside for the match. And Okada messed with him the entire match. Just being a complete and total dickhead about everything. Kicking people in the head. And he was clapping with the crowd, like cheering for Kojima. He is going full on heel. And I am so excited for it because it's the arrogance. He is becoming the arrogant champion. And it's actually really fun to watch. And Okada's actually becoming more and more. I've enjoyed everything he's been doing.
I've seen maybe 3-4 matches from Okada. I haven't really seen any of his work outside of the ring with promos and storylines and stuff like that. But I really do like Okada. And from what you tell me about Okada and what you're saying right now, I am very, very intrigued.
Oh, no. He is a master of the craft right now. He is definitely at least in the top 3 of all professional wrestlers right now, if not number 1. If you ask Dave Meltzer, he definitely is number 1.
Yeah, Dave Meltzer likes his New Japan, that's for sure.
Oh, Dave Meltzer does love the New Japan. The main event on this card, though, was definitely the best match, and that was Michael Elgin defeating Kenny Omega. And this is actually Kenny Omega's only loss in the entire G1 right now. And it was an absolute battle. Kenny Omega clearly never hit the one-winged angel because in New Japan, it's the most protected move ever. But Michael Elgin literally hit everything. His finishing move is a spin-out power bomb. Sorry, I apologize. Right after a buckle bomb. But he actually won this match with the Burning Hammer, which is the most dangerous move in professional wrestling.
Yeah, you were telling me about that earlier. What's that move again?
You get a guy in a fireman's carry. Think of John Cena's AA.
Okay,
except flip the gentleman over so you have him in feast your eyes position.
Okay.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yep, right? I gotcha.
Okay. And then instead of flipping the gentleman at all, you just twist to your side and drop them directly on their neck and head.
Do a Death Valley driver.
It's an inverted Death Valley driver.
Okay, gotcha.
And it's the most dangerous move in professional wrestling. Wow, that was really bad language right there. It is the most dangerous move in professional wrestling. And it was one of the all-time great Japanese wrestlers, super finishers, whose name I can't remember right now, so I'm not going to say it because I don't want to sound like an idiot.
Okay, fair enough.
But it was a great match, and this is, as I said, Kenny Omega's only loss in the G1 so far. The next night, we had some good things. Makabo got his first win. It was actually his second win. He got over Yuji Nagata. Nagata hasn't won yet. This is his final G1. He'll probably get his final win. Right now, we're at the point where A Block only has 2 more matches, and B Block has 3 more matches to go for every competitor. So we're getting really close to the end. Bad Luck Fale beat Kota Ibushi. Kota Ibushi has been doing pretty well. But he's been taking random losses. Bad Luck Fale has been just ripping people up. I'll go over the actual standings at the end of this when I go over all the matches. And it's really close. And I don't know actually know how they're going to finish this out because everyone's so close. Then Goto beat Zack Sabre Jr. in the match of the night, in my opinion, even though the final match was also really good, which was Hiroshi Tanahashi beating Yoshihashi, the headhunter.
Oh, wow. I don't know much about I know about Tanahashi, but
You know some of these guys. I mean, you know Zack Sabre Jr.
and Kota Ibushi. I'm talking about the last match. It's a good match. I know Tanahashi. I don't know the other guy.
I wanted to plug it and make you think that was the last match because the final match was actually the best match, and I was just waiting because I didn't want to tell you about it because you do know both of these guys, and this was actually the main event of the night and the best match of the night. Where Ishii Tomohiro, if you want to go by the Japanese way, defeated Naito Tetsuya. And it was, I mean, Ishii the Stone Pitbull versus the leader of Los Ignorables de Japón. You really can't go wrong. Ishii might be one of the stiffest workers on the entire planet, especially now that the wrestler has had to retire because of his match against Okada. But so Ishii might be the most stiff wrestler, and Naito can work with anyone. He is a master of his craft.
I've seen both of these guys wrestle, and I'm a big fan of Naito, as you know. And I do enjoy the Stone Pitbull as well. So it sounds like a match that I would be excited to watch.
Oh, it was phenomenal. So we move right in then to night 10. Evil went over Yano, which is always awesome. He just beat him up, and he hit his finisher once again. Total evil, absolute evil. I'm really bad because I only listen to Japanese commentary, so I don't actually understand what they're saying. I'm pretty sure it's like absolute evil or total evil.
Hi.
Hi. Minoru Suzuki went over Tama Tonga, but the opening of the match was really awesome because Tama Tonga, when Minoru Suzuki comes out, he always has one of his disciples of Suzuki-gun come out holding the flag. And Tama Tonga actually came out and took out Desperado without Suzuki noticing and then was holding the flag up. And that's how the match started. They actually started brawling on the outside. Tama Tonga eventually lost, but it was still a really cool opening to that match. Next, we had Sonata, who is probably, besides who he just goes over, which is Michael Elgin, the probably best competitor whose name isn't Okada or Omega in this entire G1. But he went over Michael Elgin. He's using a new finisher. I honestly don't even know how to describe it to you. It doesn't have a name yet. And I wish I could. But he is so fluid, and he's scary good and strong and tall.
Okay, well, sounds like a guy Vince McMahon would like.
You know what I'm talking about with the giant mohawk.
Right? Yes, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, he rocks a giant mohawk, and it's so cool. And he's so cool. I don't know how to describe Sonata to someone who hasn't seen him. If you haven't seen him, look him up on YouTube or whatever platform you want, because he is one of the best independent wrestlers. Not independent even. He's in New Japan, so that's not independence. He is one of the best wrestlers on the planet right now.
If you say so. I haven't seen much of his work, but I know what you're talking about. So I take your word for New Japan, like... the gospel, I guess.
Exactly.
That's the way to put it.
So next on the card, we had Kenny Omega going over Kojima. Kojima, as I said, has very rarely won in this match. It was a really great match, though. A lot of hard-hitting lariats and such. Kenny Omega hits a one-way angel for the victory. And then the main event of the night was Kazuchika Okada going over Juice Robinson, where Okada once again worked as the heel and really worked over Juice Robinson's hurt leg. It was very disrespectful. He was kind of a dick about it because the crowd was really going for Juice Robinson, and Okada just enjoyed hurting him the entire time.
Sounds fun. I'd like to see this heel Okada. It sounds like interesting wrestling to me.
Yeah, no, it's actually the most interesting Okada's been in a long while. So then we went into night 11. Yoshihashi actually went over Bad Luck Fale. It was a pretty great match. I wouldn't say great match. Bad Luck Fale matches are a little different. He's a giant monster, of course. But the surprise victory for Yoshihashi was really cool. Zack Sabre Jr. beat Togi Makabe. As I said, he hasn't gotten a win yet in the tournament. This is his final tournament. So he's just kind of putting everyone over. Every match he's put on, though, he has some of the stiffest shoe kicks you will ever see to people's chests. It is pretty much, he's pretty much the predecessor of everyone doing the Daniel Bryan yes kicks.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, no, but he is, this is the last ever tournament, and it's been great things. All right, and I just said Makabe. That's not who that is. He's the Lariat Master. The next match is the one I was talking about, which is Yuji Nagata, who hasn't gotten a win. He is the master of the shoe kicks. And he lost to Ishii, who is Stone Pitbull. Great monster of a man. Enjoy everything about him. The next match was Naito over Goto. And if you don't know Goto, he uses the GTR, which is basically, if you will, I don't even know how to describe it. You know the GTRs, right?
The GTS.
It's the reverse GTS. There we go. That's what I was trying to say. I apologize. Thank you, Diesel. You're a good man. But Naito won over Goto. And then we had in the best match of the night, the only one I want to talk about from that night, is Kota Ibushi over Hiroshi Tanahashi. And Ibushi literally kneed the hell out of Tanahashi. He delivered his knee and he won with the Ibushi trigger. That's what they called it. He had his arms spread out all the way and then just a straight knee to the temple.
Yeah, this is the only match that I heard about before we started talking about the G1 tonight. And yeah, I heard that he just went to town with his knee to the skull and sounds like something brutal and sounds like something that I would be into.
Oh, it was so much fun. I love Kota Ibushi right now, and I will tell you right now, in my pro wrestling crate, or in my pro wrestling tees, what am I saying, cart right now, is the Kota Ibushi new shirt, and I'll probably order it very soon, next time the paycheck comes.
Sounds like you.
Yeah, I love me my wrestling tees, and we will also be doing an unboxing of the next heel crate from Pro Wrestling Crates that I already ordered.
Ooh, can't wait for that.
Oh, it's going to be awesome. I got three t-shirts and all the fun stuff coming as well. But the next night, we went to night 11. We went to night 12. Sonata beat Juice Robinson, once again working over that knee and leg. And he won with the move I don't have a name for yet, so we're going to move right along. Tori Yano actually beat Michael Elgin in the next match. He got Elgin to deliver a low blow in front of the referee. So Elgin got disqualified, and thus Toriano got the win. No tape in this match, but Toriano was still with the shenanigans, and he got him real good with this one. It was pretty impressive, actually. Next, we had Minoru Suzuki going over Kojima. Once again, Minoru Suzuki is just a beast. I've talked to you about him before. He is a sadist. If you listen to Cyrus ever, if you want to listen to Killing the Town, listen to Don Callis, a.k.a. Cyrus. He will tell you how much of a madman Minoru Suzuki is. And that's who I model my XWA character after, because he's a madman, and he's a sadist, and he wants to watch people get hurt.
Yeah, he says it's a shoot when he's running for him when he's on commentary. He's legitimately scared that he's going to beat the daylights out of him.
No, yeah, and he should be, because he is an actual MMA fighter and a scary gentleman. Next, we had Kazuchika Okada beating Tama Tonga. The best part of this match was that Tama Tonga came out in full-on Rainmaker gear. I know you've seen it with the long jacket and everything like that.
Yep.
Tama Tonga came out in full-on Rainmaker gear doing the whole shenanigans of the Rainmaker. Clearly, Okada won. Okada is still undefeated in the G1 right now. He has just been laying waste to people and being a douchebag about it. Oh, it's been pretty great, though. I've enjoyed it. And the main event on this card was Kenny Omega going over Evil in an insanely stiff match. I don't know how else to explain it. V-triggers, knee strikes to the brain, just so many stiff strikes. And Kenny Omega eventually won once again.
So what you're saying is New Japan at its best.
Yeah, no, definitely New Japan. This G1, Dave Meltzer's also already said it, that this is the greatest G1 that has ever been put on. This might be the greatest tournament Dave Meltzer has ever said in pro wrestling history.
Oh, Dave Meltzer is a great wrestling mind. So then once again, take his word, like gospel, like I do yours about New Japan.
No, exactly. And there is night 13. I haven't seen it yet, so I'm not going to talk about the matches. But I am going to give you the updated standings right now in the for all the points. So in A block, we have Naito and Hiroshi Tanahashi, the ace. You know what those both are.
Yep.
They're leading with 10. And A block is the most, I don't know. I honestly don't. A block only has two matches left, and I don't know what they're going to do with it. Because there is now five other superstars tied with 8 points right behind the leaders. And we have Bad Luck Fale, Goto, Ibushi, Ishii, Zack Sabre Jr., all tied with 8. So I have honestly no idea what they're going to do. They only have 2 matches left, and they have to settle this out for 1 champion for A block.
Coming right down to the wire.
Oh, no, they're not messing around. And then in B block, who will still have 3 matches left, but still, it's insanely close. We have Okada, clearly, who is running a perfect round right now at 12. Kenny Omega, who's only lost 1 match at 10. But then we do have 3 other competitors at 8 with Evil, Sonata, and Suzuki. So really, both blocks right now are wide open, and I have no idea how they're going to finish this out.
Sounds crazy. I don't know. I don't really know exactly how it works, but it sounds like it's all coming to halt pretty soon.
It's the most amazing tournament ever, and I agree with Meltzer that this is the greatest tournament that anyone has ever seen. And next week, I will be finishing up with the block finishes for both participants in the entire G1. But I'm going to throw it over to the Diesel once again to give us a quick recap of Impact this week.
Yeah, it was a pretty good show again this week, but we're kind of running short on time here, so I'm going to make this one snappy and just give you all the important bits here. So it started out with Super X Division Cup match. First of the 2 semifinals, second will be next week on the go-home show at Destination X. This one was Desmond Xavier versus Drago. That was a pretty fun match. A couple of swantons over the top rope, springboards, all that you would imagine in a good cruiserweight match.
I do love Drago.
And so at the end of the match, Xavier had Drago set up in the ropes like he was going to hit him with the 619. But instead of just going through the ropes, he went all the way around the ring post and hit the 619, which I thought was pretty impressive. Then I believe he hit a Phoenix Splash to get the 1-2-3. So he's moving on, and I don't have my notes in front of me right now, so I can't remember. It's ACH, and it's one guy from Pro Wrestling Noah, and I can't remember his name off the top of my head. So I apologize for that, but I'll discuss that one next week. Another big thing that happened on Impact this week was Moose defended his grand championship against EC3, and this match is kind of like a MMA 3-round, 3-minute fight, and it has judges, so they'll score each round. There's 3 judges, and it was Dirty Dutch Mantel, a.k.a. Zeb Coulter. Then there was Scott D'Amore, who's head writer, he used to be manager on TNA back in the day, too. And Bruce Prichard was the third judge. So basically what happened was the first 2 rounds they split, even though I think EC3 should have won the first 2 rounds, so it shouldn't have mattered. But it went down to a judge's decision, and it was a split decision. The first judge had them both at 10-10. Second judge had them both at 10-10. Bruce Prichard, the third judge, had EC3 winning the round at 10-8, and we crowned a new grand champion in Impact Wrestling.
So this was all in shenanigans, though, right? You've told me this already.
Yes, I don't know what's going on with Bruce Prichard. There's something going on with him. He has Tyrus as his like bodyguard, too, so I don't know if EC3 is paying him off, if he's getting paid under the table from other people like Trevor Lee, who currently has the X Division title, like I talked about last week. And I don't know what's going on with Bruce Prichard, and it's kind of starting to annoy me a little bit, but maybe there'll be a big payoff at the end. Who knows?
I don't know because I don't watch. But it sounds interesting. It sounds a little convoluted, but it sounds interesting.
So finally, at the very start of the show, they opened up with a pre-taped segment in the LAX's clubhouse. And it was Conan telling everybody he just got this text message. And by the end of the night, they're going to get a new member. So they teased it the whole night. The announcers were teasing. It's going to be someone from El Patron's family because the main event was Alberto El Patron, his father, De Caras, can't remember exactly, and his brother has a similar name to his dad, versus three members from LAX, six-man tag. This match was okay. It was back and forth. I mean, El Patron's dad is up there in years, so he didn't really take any bumps, and I've seen El Patron's brother wrestle previously, and he actually looked like he was more in shape than he was about 6 months ago.
Back when he was in WCPW.
Yep, and he was moving around the ring a lot better. He was doing a lot better, I thought. And so basically, at the end of the match, there was a ref bump, and El Patron had one of the members of LAX in his cross armbar. And so then he's in the cross armbar. The member of LAX is tapping out. And then all of a sudden, at the top of the screen, you see the new member of LAX, low-key on the top rope, double stomp on El Patron, video game?
Full-on Hitman?
Yeah, he's in his Hitman
assassin suit.
And on the back of his jacket, it says LAX, and he's the new member. And the LAX end up getting the win because the ref gets up, counts to three, and the last shot they had before they ended the show was I forgot his name.
Low key,
there you go. He was holding up both titles because El Patron is the undisputed TNA, because it's still called the TNA Heavyweight Championship, and GFW Heavyweight Championship. Which at Destination X, they're going to combine the titles and have a brand new GFW Heavyweight Championship.
Oh my God, I did not see Loki coming at all for the one who joined LAX. I thought you told me earlier when you said El Patron, you totally teased me on that one, Diesel.
It was unintentional, but I didn't see Loki either, and I watched the show. It was a total surprise to me. I thought, oh man, they better not just do El Patron after 2 weeks ago when he joined and then left right away and took him out. And I like this way better. I like Loki. I think he's going to add an element to LAX. He's going to make him a stronger faction, and I'm excited for this.
I don't even watch it, and I'm excited for this fact. I love Loki. That is a phenomenal thing that you have just told me, and I love Loki.
Okay. And that was just a little recap of this week's Impact, and we want to spend a few minutes before we bring the show to a close talking about What Culture Pro Wrestling. So right now we're in the midst of the World Cup and Loda just restarted, and Chad has the list of the opening round matches, and I'll let him discuss this.
So we are definitely going to be doing a full bracket episode when our good buddy JR, not JR as in Jim Ross, but our buddy JR, we'll be joining the podcast in a couple weeks. We're going to do a full bracket show on this. But I just wanted to run over real quick the first round matches, because it's amazing what WCPW, a.k.a. What Culture Pro Wrestling, the What Culture website, has put together for this tournament. So the first round matchups go as follows. We have Kushida versus Kenny Williams, which is just flat out amazing. Yeah,
this match is interesting to me because both guys have the Back to the Future gimmick, and I was hoping that these guys would match up.
Oh, it's awesome. Next, we have Zack Sabre Jr. versus Jay Lethal.
I love Jay Lethal. I love Zack Sabre Jr. This is probably the match I'm second most looking forward to on the entire first round card.
The next match is the Ticking Time Bomb, Hiromu Takahashi versus Lucky Kid from the German qualifier, and Takahashi is my dark horse to win this entire tournament.
Takahashi had a great showing at the Japanese qualifier, but Lucky Kid was someone that I've not previously seen, never even heard of, and he really surprised me, and I like him, and I'm very excited to see this match.
Oh, definitely. The next match is Joe Coffey versus Michael Elgin, which will probably be the hardest hitting match on the entire card.
Oh man, you couldn't put a better matchup for each of these guys in the first round. I mean, two big guys. It's going to be New Japan style match for sure.
Oh, for sure. And the next match is actually what I think will probably be the coolest match. I don't know if it'll be the most technical match, but it'll at least be the coolest match. We have Angelico versus Ricochet.
Oh, yeah. I was kind of looking forward to the Ricochet-Matt Sydal match at the U.S. qualifiers, and it was kind of a letdown, but I heard that Matt Sydal separated his shoulder a week or two before, so couldn't really do as much as he wanted to. It was still a decent match, so I'm expecting this match to be even better.
Oh, this match is going to be phenomenal. The next match is a complete clash of styles, but I'm actually also very excited for this one. We have the German qualifier Bad Bones versus Pentagon Jr., a.k.a. Penta El Zero M, Sierra Mueda. And with the package pile driver, probably one of my favorite moves in all of pro wrestling.
This match is going to be hard hitting, high flying. They're going to pull everything out of the bag in this match, I think. It's going to be a fun match to watch.
I'm so excited. I love Penta El Zero M. And not to quote Jack the Jobber or even endorse what he does, but I agree with him. He is one of the most fun wrestlers on the planet right now. The next match is what we have already all talked about being the match of the night, which is Will Ospreay versus Rey Mysterio.
Oh, yeah. This is definitely the match I'm looking most forward to on the entire first round card. It's a dream match. It's kind of like the question I asked you earlier about dream matches, guys from different generations facing each other. This match is going to be a hell of a match, and I am extremely excited. I'm pretty sure this is the first time I've ever matched up as well.
As far as I know, I mean, Will Ospreay has never been in Lucha Underground, and I don't think he's ever faced up with Rey Mysterio.
I don't know. We'll have to look that up. Maybe we'll get back to you on that one next week, but
The final match.
Okay, I was going to say you missed one.
No, I didn't miss one. I had one final match, and this is the match that I don't know which way to call because I'm super excited because I love both these guys. We have the Speedball Mike Bailey versus the Kiwi Buzzsaw Travis Banks, and I effing love Travis Banks. I also love Mike Bailey, but I effing love Travis Banks.
Travis Banks has been killing it on the independent scene this year in Progress and everywhere he's been, WCPW. He was even at the WrestleMania, Access. He was at Access this year. So that makes me think that pretty soon he'll be a part of the WWE in some way. Mike Bailey is a lot like Lucky Kid, where I didn't know anything about him coming into it. And by the end of the night, I was a huge fan. I actually tweeted him after I saw his match and told him that he made me a huge fan and I'm rooting for him. And he actually messaged me back, and I thought that was pretty cool. That was actually one of the first message backs I ever got. I'm kind of new to Twitter, so
hey, man. Don't hate me. Every wrestler out there, I just hope if you listen to this podcast ever, just give us a like. We just want you to get over. We like you. We love pro wrestling. That's really all there is to it. We love pro wrestling more than pretty much anything else. We watch it all the time. We talk about it all the time. We just love pro wrestling.
But I think that you had a dark horse earlier. We're just talking. I think that Mike Bailey is my dark horse to win. I really think that promo he cut in the qualifier saying, I'm not here to win it. I'm just happy to be a part of it. I don't know how far I'm going to go, but I'm just happy to be here. I think that's kind of like foreshadowing, but I could be wrong, but we'll see. It's going to be a fun night.
Yeah, and we're not talking about that yet because we have our bracket show coming up in 2 weeks when we'll also be doing our TakeOver Brooklyn 3 predictions and SummerSlam predictions. But we still have a chance to talk about the first comeback of WCPW's Loaded, which was an absolute, not to quote their actual name of the show, but Loaded card.
Pay-per-view coming up called Stacked.
Once again, we'll just quote everything that they have. But they it was just phenomenal. It was an hour and a half of pure wrestling greatness.
Four matches, and it's been 6 months since Loading's been taken off there. And yeah, it was well worth the wait. These matches were awesome. I don't know. I didn't watch the G1, obviously, but I don't know if there was anything else better in wrestling this week than Loaded.
I mean, as a complete show, nah, I mean, the entire thing, no. I mean, the G1 was better, but Loaded was better than anything else on TV.
Well, it was great. It started out with that 8-man tag with the Prestige versus Rampage, Primate, Martin Kirby, and Gabriel Kidd.
Yep. And
it was a fun match. It was a good way to open the show.
And the Prestige is basically the European version of the NWO.
And I'm excited that we got Loaded back so we can actually properly build up the Prestige. It's kind of been hard to like cement them as a real heel faction with having a pay-per-view here, a pay-per-view there, slip them in on the qualifiers. I mean, a weekly show is really going to help them a lot.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, and they're an awesome faction. Every one of those members is someone I enjoy watching wrestling.
Yeah, and the next match, we got a little bit of Matt Riddle versus Alex Gracie. The legend, Alex Gracie, is no longer a prospect. Don't roll your eyes.
He is awesome, and I enjoy it, and I enjoy the gimmick. And that's why I rolled my eyes, because that's what it's supposed to make you do. Because he's not a legend. He is just a prospect.
I like Alex Gracie, and I was all right that he got to win. I liked the match. It was a fun little match.
I did enjoy it. Matt Riddle's a badass.
Yeah, I agree. I think the next match was the tag titles match.
Yeah, and where Scotty Wainwright got hurt, and Will Ospreay carried the entire match against War Machine, who are apparently going to hold every single title in every single promotion.
It's a shame about Scotty Wainwright, and I feel bad, but I mean, we wouldn't have got that performance out of Will Ospreay if he wouldn't have got hurt. So, I mean, I'm not saying that it justifies him getting hurt.
Yeah, no, definitely. Neither of us are endorsing anyone getting hurt. Scotty Wainwright, we feel bad for you. That's not all we're saying. We're just saying how great what Will Ospreay
was. But, I mean,
was.
When his back was against the wall and he came out, and I thought that he actually might beat War Machine by himself. It was an amazing performance. I mean, Will Ospreay, I mean, man, he's just amazing.
Oh, yeah. Everything Will Ospreay's done this year has been absolutely amazing. And then we had the main event.
Yeah, it was for number one contendership for the WCPW Championship. And it was,
whoop, whoop.
Yep. Bullet Club, Marty Scurll versus Kyle O'Reilly. It was a fun little technical match.
It was. And Marty Scurll ended up winning with the mousetrap pin, which is one of his new finishers that if you follow him on Twitter, you would know about. And that's what he calls it. And it was amazing.
Yeah, it was set up by the finger break spot. And I don't care. It never gets old. I love that.
No, that pop is one of the greatest things ever. Marty Scurll is probably the most over wrestler in all of professional wrestling right now.
Fun fact, my stream was lagging a little bit. So when he finally, at the end of the match, when he hit that finger break spot, it actually skipped back to the beginning of the finger break spot. And I saw it twice, like back to back. I'm like,
yeah. And it was really awesome seeing Kyle O'Reilly one more time on a WCPW show. But against one of my favorite wrestlers right now, Marty Scurll. But Loaded was absolutely phenomenal. We had Joe Hendry coming out trying to attack Marty Scurll because he was the number one contender now. And Marty Scurll ended up raising the belt at the end of the show.
And it ended with Travis Banks attacking Gabriel Kidd, setting up their internet title match for next week. And so it should be a banging show next week as well. So that's about all the time we have tonight. And we had fun. I had fun. Did you have fun, Chad?
Oh, I definitely had fun tonight, Diesel.
I'm excited to come back next week and massage all your ears with my not-so-soothing voice. But so anything that you'd like to say before we close?
Diesel, I would just like to say I've had a great night with you. I think this has been one of our best evenings ever, and pro wrestling just keeps getting better.
How can people get a hold of you? Social media.
They can get a hold of us on Twitter at viewfromtoprope. You can also check out our Gmail if you want to send us a question at viewfromthetoprope@gmail.com.
Got a Facebook page, which is View From The Top Rope as well.
Oh, yeah. You just check us out on all social media. There's also a Tumblr out there. So just follow us all the time.
I'm sure we're on Tout too. I don't know. I haven't checked, but if you want to get a hold of me, I'm at Twitter. I'm at Diesel_VFTR. And I guess that's about all the time we have tonight. For my partner, Chad, I have been Diesel, and we thank you for climbing high with us, and we hope you enjoyed our view from the top rope.